Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking about Jesus Christ Super Saver, ancient wisdom and your money.
So this is not our Andrew Lloyd Webber version of a 70s rock play. Or have you ever seen Jesus Christ Superstar?
I have never seen it somehow.
Okay. But it is a good one.
We took inspiration from that title for this episode.
Absolutely. And okay, so like not to launch into the proverbial phrases too soon, but who it is that you listen to will determine who it is that you become. And so if you're listening to our podcast, you listen to Joel and Matt talk about money, I think there's a good chance you're going to end up in a similar place as us, at least financially speaking, compared to the rest of the world, yeah. Right? Like certainly there are going to be differences between our finances and your finances. But who it is that we listen to, what we fill our minds with, truly does have a massive impact
on our
future.
Say, garbage in, garbage out.
All of these things that determine your future. And so that's why we're essentially like revisiting some of these seriously ancient truths, and specifically we're going to look at how it is that they pertain to your money. We're going to talk about the moves that you can make and how this ancient wisdom can inform those moves.
Yeah, and we're going to tap some biblical wisdom. We're going to tap some of the Stoics.
That's the Jesus Christ part.
Exactly. Exactly. And we're going to we're going to get Old Testament with
Jesus Christ, Buddha, and a Stoic walk into a bar kind of. But we figured that started getting a little too long.
That was
a little more heretical as well.
Another title idea for this episode. But I like what we went with. So hopefully in today's episode, we'll cover a bunch of ground. And I think, Matt, especially in a time where we rely on a lot of modern wisdom, well, we thought it could be helpful to bring out some ancient wisdom at the same time.
That's right, man. Okay, real quick, I've got a frugal or cheap for you. A couple of weeks ago, some friends of ours were throwing a party. And this was an adults-only party, so no kids allowed. So this was after you put the kids down to bed kind of thing.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, no, I was definitely looking forward to
it.
It's
one of those creepy Tom Cruise parties, is it?
No, not that kind of, not an eyes wide shut, whatever, kind of party. But a normal grown-ups adult party. And specifically, I failed to mention this. These were some neighbors of ours directly across the street. And this raised the question as to whether or not we should get a babysitter. Maybe it led to a discussion. It wasn't an all-out argument, but we got close. We were discussing it. And I felt that because it was going to just be across the street and because we have an older daughter now, that it was going to be totally fine for us to put the kids down, walk across the street. Literally, we were going to, my idea was, let's set up an iPad. And if anything comes up, they can just FaceTime us. They all know how to use the iPad. But you see where this is going. Kate disagreed with me. So what are your thoughts? Do you feel that I was being frugal or cheap by counting on our kids to report if there was anything going on?
Oh, well, I don't know, man. I'm somewhere in the middle. I think probably it's frugal. I think if you're across the street, I think you can get by without a babysitter, especially since you have a 9-year-old who's
pretty smart.
She's pretty good.
I mean, all the kids are pretty smart.
She can hold down the fort.
And plus, if it was like a real emergency, and let's say the technology failed, they could just like run across the street.
Right.
Like literally, we were right there. Kate disagreed, and I think she knew before we ended the conversation. Like we never reached a conclusion. And then the next time I brought it up, she was like, "Oh, we've got a babysitter." And I mean, truly, in the end, I was like, "All right, that's fine." I was willing to pay a babysitter because it meant that she was going to be able to relax, maybe have just a better time. But that also kind of raises another question. At what age would you feel comfortable leaving your oldest to, like you said, hold down the fort?
Yeah.
Not necessarily just within the neighborhood.
It depends on distance.
It depends
on how long
distance.
You're going to be gone. Yeah. Because I would trust her now probably going across the street for an hour because she would know where we were. But I don't know what age because so much of it depends on how mature she is,
the
right?
Individual.
And so, how
depends
do I trust
your
her
circumstances
with her younger siblings, especially as they grow up? Like, can they listen to her and will they obey? So,
well,
I don't know, but I will say, I think you guys did mention that you expanded your budget for babysitting services, which I think is smart. You've basically called out in your budget, you've prioritized being able to go out, the two of you. And so you probably wish you would have used it on a different sort of date night.
You kind of think that there's a way that you can do both at the same time. Because I see the ability to A, hang out with some friends, and B, also not spend the money because they're just right there. And again, we would have put them down. So they would have been, for the most part, especially the younger ones, either asleep or just reading quietly in their bed as they peacefully drifted off to sleep while we were hanging out across the street.
But. Well, I think the other right thing to do is, if it's that big of a deal to your significant other,
all
right, I guess, well, I'm not going to be, it would be cheap then because it would make her upset and she would not be able to enjoy her time. And so, you got to think about that as well, not just whether you feel comfortable with it, but whether they feel comfortable with it too.
Your partner as well. I think, speaking of ancient wisdom, better defer to your partner,
right.
Defer to your spouse.
What, happy wife, happy life is always what I've heard, but that
definitely,
sounds old school, but it has some truth to it. So.
Yeah, it does. This is called Sour Pipe Project Apricot Crumble. This is a beer by Vitamin C Brewing, and it's not vitamin C as in like vitamin A, B, vitamin C. It's vitamin C as in vitamin ocean. So I'm looking forward to this brewery who happens to be located by the ocean. We'll share our thoughts at the end of the episode.
Very nice. All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking this out. Anything that beer that tastes like a pie, I want to try it. So,
the fruited sours, lactose, or pastry sours in particular.
Yep.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Well, Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the subject at hand. We are talking about ancient wisdom in this episode. And, as I thought about this, I was thinking, well, what is it today that most of us use somewhat regularly, but it falls short of kind of what we're used to? Maybe quality has gone down the hill, and maybe think of IKEA for some reason. Like,
I thought you were going to say lead pipes. They don't make them like they used to.
That's true. The brass knuckles, they're not quite as thick as they used to be. Well,
brass knuckles. I'm not talking about like gang fights. I'm thinking about like actual pipes.
Oh, in your plumbing.
I was making a joke because lead pipes were terrible.
Oh, they were. I thought you were like talking about
those fighting chains,
slamming someone over the head with one. But
and you got your mind on what was that motorcycle
Violence.
Game? Road Rash.
Oh yeah,
Sega Genesis. That's the kind of lead pipe you're thinking of.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. I don't know why. But yeah.
He chose violence.
But I'm thinking about IKEA, and I'm thinking, like, we have a few IKEA pieces in our house.
Yep.
Mostly.
We do too.
For storage in our kids' room. They're basically like the cheap bookshelves, right? But yeah, nothing I've encountered in IKEA as I'm walking through there has ever come close to the beauty and the sturdiness that our favorite antique furniture pieces that we have in our house possess, right? I love my Brazilian rosewood table.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah, we have a mid-century teak desk.
I didn't know you're so wealthy, Joel.
They're not even terribly expensive. We have 70-year-old walnut dressers, Matthew.
You're just bragging now.
A life of opulence. Yes, it's true. And
rich mahogany, the smell of leather.
Yes. And these are pieces we plan to have forever. And they were not even terribly expensive pieces to begin with. But they're a far cry from, let's say, the IKEA wardrobe that crumbled when we tried to move it that one time. I swear we paid $50 for that. It lasted for a couple years in the house. We tried to move it, and it basically disintegrated in front of our eyes. Well,
it just evaporates.
Right, yes.
where did it go? It
teleported to another realm.
It's like the snap. Thanos?
Right. Well, and that could just be maybe because our skills with an Allen wrench aren't very good, and so it lasts for a minute, but I don't know. I think it made me think that no one really ever gets jazzed about inheriting their parents' Calax shelving unit or something like that, right? But that 100-year-old mahogany chest, that's a different story. It's like this family heirloom, and the way it's crafted and made is, you might be thrilled to get that one of these days. And I think the same is true when it comes to modern advice, right? There's some good stuff out there, but the best of it is actually based on ancient wisdom that has stood the test of time. And so we want to really talk about older money advice that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, delve into that and see maybe what it has to say to us today.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm not on TikTok, but I've seen some of the videos that are out there that masquerade as financial advice that's floating around there on the platform out there in the ether. And if you are only listening to folks on TikTok, for instance, there's a lot of wisdom that you're missing out on when we only pay attention to, you know, like influencers on some of the different social media platforms. And that's not to say that there aren't solid folks out there who are doing decent work in the short form format. There definitely are. But the best wisdom, the best advice stands the test of time, like you said. And you know, we're not just picking on social media as well. There's crappy financial advice even in legacy media, you know, like the more traditional forms of media.
Oh, even in some of the bigger papers.
TV, papers, blogs.
Worse.
There's bad books out there as well. Just because you get a publishing deal or you self-publish, that doesn't necessarily mean that there is good advice within that book, within that text. So in today's episode, we're gonna be pulling from the Bible. We're gonna be talking about Stoicism and just some of these other wisdom traditions from hundreds to thousands of years before our time. And then we'll connect that ancient wisdom to like a modern implementation in order to help you to determine what it is that you should be doing with your money.
Yeah. And you just mentioned books, Matt, and it makes me think like most of the books that people read these days are actually new books, right? And yet we have so many rich books from years and years and years ago that we just never even touch. And I subscribe to this newsletter, actually. It's called Read More Books. And this guy, Jeremy Anderberg, runs it. And he reads 100-plus books a year. And so I just kind of want to, you know, as somebody who's an avid reader who writes a newsletter about it, I'm constantly curious, well, what is it that he's reading? And maybe is there something worth reading for me? And he just wrote a top 10 list that includes some of his takeaways from having read more than 1,000 books, which is impressive. And one suggestion that he gave, which I thought was just helpful, was to not read the new shiny books that get marketed to us, to spend more time with the classics. And I think he's spot on there. I couldn't agree more. I think the same is true when it comes to helpful thoughts on money, right? There are, like you admitted, Matt, some great personal finance influencers giving really helpful advice on some of the socials, on Twitter, on Instagram, whatever it is. But the more we can incorporate ancient wisdom alongside folks who are good at translating it for modern ears, the more thorough our understanding and connection to this subject that has this massive impact, this massive influence on all of us is going to be.
And it's not necessarily that old books are automatically good or wise or better. It's important to be...
They are automatically dustier.
But we want folks to be thoughtful about which ancient wisdom texts that we look at, that we read, that we listen to, makes me think about a book that we've been checking out that came out recently called Super Abundance. Speaking of newer books, this is a newer book, but it's a quality book and it's pretty nerdy. It's written by two economists. But at the beginning of the book, they're basically going through some of these different economists' views of how humanity would progress over the, and these are predictions that were made like, I mean, hundreds of years ago.
1600, 1700, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Most of them were way off. We're seriously off. And they often thought that the Earth was becoming overpopulated and that we would basically run out of resources, that civilization would collapse. And that's often referred to as the Malthusian view because Thomas Robert Malthus, perhaps, I think that's his middle name. He was the most famous person arguing from that vantage point. But this, you know, this book is all about just how wrong his views have come to be over the years. You know, instead of fewer resources,
it's we've like got Malthusian refutation.
Yes, yeah, we've got more resources these days. Instead of fewer calories per person that are available to us now, food it's widely plentiful. Even if some of those resources aren't being properly matched to those who need it in the immediate short term, I could go on and on. Human ingenuity has just proven to overcome these resource limitations. And so, you know, while we are certainly critical of a lot of the modern advice that is dispensed today, it's important to question the validity of old advice as well. Don't just take it as canon. Don't just take it as, you know, truth just because it was written to 300 plus years ago.
Yeah. And in fact, depending on what topic you're delving into, there's probably a lot that's changed scientifically, geographically, like our understanding of a lot
Absolutely.
Of things have developed. And so you don't want to go back that far. But
yeah, if you're a doctor, don't look back at some of the old texts of
right.
like bloodletting, how that should be something that we
don't go watch the Nick and then perform surgery like that. Like that's probably not a good approach. But one of the reasons that ancient wisdom often holds up is because even though the times have changed, human nature hasn't. And even though our financial systems and the products that are available to us wouldn't have been recognizable even just a couple hundred years ago, the emotions that humans possess remain just as true and consistent as ever. Even though there are better tools at our disposal, we still have a hard time using them appropriately and effectively because scarcity, jealousy, greed, like people were dealing with all those things, all those emotions thousands of years ago. But it's not like we've been able to eradicate them in any way, form, or fashion. Like, we're still dealing with them today, just as much, if not more so. And so, yeah, some things never change because human nature never really changes. And this is also why we're able to take a neutral stance when it comes to, you know, whether or not something like money is a good or bad thing, right? It's not inherently either one of those things because it comes down to what the individual is doing with that money. You can use the tool for good or for bad, but it all comes down really to how you wield it.
That's right. Yeah. Money is not inherently virtuous, right? It is a completely passive tool. So we're going to go back even further, though, than just some of the economists and predictions that were made a few hundred years ago. We're going to go back further. We're going to focus less on economists and their ilk. We're more interested in these time-tested passages from literally from millennia past that rang true then, but also have a similar resonance today. We're going to talk about how those truths apply to your money. We'll get to that right after this break. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, Matt, let's keep going with this. Let's talk money and ancient wisdom, and maybe let's start with the Hebrew Bible, in fact, where specifically there's a lot of proverbs that speak to money mm-hmm. and that speak to a life well lived. And the thing is, you don't have to be Jewish or be a Christian to gain value from the wisdom, the copious amounts of wisdom that spring from the 66 books in the Bible, the books in the Old Testament, or as the Hebrew Bible, right? And the reality is that our whole society is infused with Judeo-Christian ethics. They form the basis of much of our cultural reality. Our country was largely founded on a lot of those mm-hmm. ethical considerations.
Our legal structures as well that govern our country today.
Right. But I think it can be hard for us to see that. Because it's the water we swim in, and we're like, what's water? Well, it is truly kind of all around us, so it can be hard if you're not looking for it to see that it's kind of the reality of the world around us in so many ways. And Matt, much of the wisdom from those traditions kind of feels less accessible to us today. And I think it's because our nation isn't nearly as steeped in the wisdom literature from these two monotheistic religions, not nearly as much as we used to be, at least.
Sure.
And you know, that's not to, we're not, no judgment here, but we do think that, religious or not, spending more time with these books can help us better understand ourselves, the people around us, and the society that we live in. And we think that spending some time with the Proverbs, with some of this wisdom literature, can help us understand money better too.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting is I bet there are a lot of folks out there who know way more Bible verses than they realize because they just thought that they were just sayings that their grandma said. You know, they're like, man, grandma was so wise. And it's like, well, I think she was wise, but I think she also just knew the Bible, or she knew a lot of verses. And
she was in touch with ancient wisdom more than we are now.
Exactly. And so like one that kind of falls within that vein is Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18, which is pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before the fall. I think a lot of times, in my mind at least, I always shorten that one to like pride goes before the fall.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's not quite that one.
Let's just abbreviate that modern wisdom or the ancient wisdom, Matt.
It's the How to Money translation. But Proverbs is just one of those books, though, that it's considered wisdom literature. And instead of the hard and fast rules of what you can and can't do, they're more like rules of thumb. And this one is basically stating that the more prideful we are, the more likely we are to end up in a bad place. You know, like we actually had an episode not too long ago where we talked about the characteristics of great investors, and humility. That was up there as one of the most important characteristics that we think folks should embody when it comes to getting far with their money. And because the fact is, if we're too prideful to take important, helpful advice, or if we're just even unwilling to admit that we don't know everything, there's a good chance that it's going to wreak havoc within our lives.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe can we give kind of a modern example of this, Matt? I think maybe that'll help connect the dots.
Plenty of examples of there's pride so many. In our world today.
There's so many. Yes, I mean, we could spend the whole rest of the episode giving examples. But just made me think of everyone's good friend Kanye West was on CNBC recently talking about his breakup with The Gap. And, you know, he has helped The Gap be, I guess, more successful, which is that's not saying a whole lot because The Gap has been pretty pathetic for a whole lot of years now. But yeah, they have now parted ways. And so, Kanye was on CNBC and he basically told the host that he refuses to take advice from people who have less money than he does. And of course, the interviewer, she was pretty speechless because that's just odd. But that's Kanye for you, right? And I don't know, but his response to me, it was telling because he thinks he's the only guy in the room who knows what he's doing. He thinks he's the most talented. And when you think of yourself in that way, you're bound to make bigger mistakes at some point. And whether that's because there truly is someone who has more knowledge than you do, maybe it's because they're simply able to provide a different perspective, or maybe it has more to do with the social impacts of someone who's prideful, right? Either way, like to say that you can't accept advice from someone who is less financially successful than you are, to me, reflects a pretty prideful spirit and a lack of realizing that we can learn from all sorts of people around us. Like, you know what? I could learn something from Kanye, even despite his kind of erratic behavior. And the more that we are on the lookout for wisdom from the mouths of others, I think the better off we're going to be.
That's right, man. Yeah, let's keep moving then. Let's snag another one from Proverbs. This is from chapter 22. Verse 1 reads, "A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold." And so basically what this one is saying is that money is not everything. So you kind of gave Kanye as an example.
Which he always did his Sunday service thing. I feel like we could go there and read some of these passages for...
He found Jesus, according... Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. I don't know. That's not for me to decide or to judge. But you gave him as an example. My mind kind of drifts off to somebody else who basically completely ruined the reputation, which is Bernie Madoff. Let's imagine that even though he had done all the terrible things he did, let's imagine that he had somehow avoided going to jail. He had managed to hang on to all of his money. Would you rather be the guy or the girl with ludicrous, ridiculous amounts of money where you've got billions in the bank, but everyone hates you? Or would you rather just be a regular person with average assets who has a solid reputation where you're able to live a fulfilling and happy life? And while there might be some folks out there who might be tempted to, I think truly you would know that would not lead to you being happy. Because, you know, a lot of us here we're keen to build wealth, right? We're here to develop better money habits. But we obviously don't want to do it at the expense of our integrity. I just saw a recent survey actually showing that folks, they care more about being respected at work than they care actually about making more money. I think there's totally something to that, even if there's like this underlying truth that folks aren't even aware of. Like, I think that those desires are pointing to like a higher, a more ultimate truth. We would all be more than happy to get a 20% raise tomorrow, but if that came alongside a boss who doesn't respect us or maybe who puts us down constantly, that fatter paycheck, it is not going to keep us around very long. Ultimately, it's not about the money. It's also about how we're treated as individuals and the other things that matter in life. When you're talking about Kanye, it also makes me think about just how somebody who's prideful, there are just social barriers that get, like these mores and norms and traditions that also just get pushed to the side with somebody who's prideful. And so feelings get hurt, bridges get burned, and there are individuals who are like, all right, well, even if that guy is like the smartest guy in the room, or even if that guy is the most wealthy person around, I don't like how he treats people. I don't like how he treats me. And it makes you not necessarily want to do business with somebody like that.
We've all known somebody who was the best at something or just really, really good at something. But because of how prideful they are, because of how much of a show off they might be, it's like, we just don't want to hang around them. And it doesn't matter that they're brilliant in a brilliant designer or something like that. It's like, I'd rather work with the second most brilliant designer because the person who is the best at this is just too tough to get along with. Okay. So we're going to get past just the Proverbs, Matt, but there's just really is when you're talking about old school wisdom literature that has a lot to say to us today about money. Proverbs is really the place to start. We're going to get to some of the Stoics. We're even going to get to some New Testament Christianity, but something else from Proverbs 22 real quick about debt.
Yeah, Proverbs 22 is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely one worth looking at.
There's a lot there.
Well, verse 7 says, the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is servant to the lender. And we've talked about having loads of debt, how it can impact your mental faculties, right? How debt kind of makes you dumber. The reality is, like studies show that if you're walking around up to your eyeballs in debt, you're going to lose something like 10 to 12 points off your IQ. It's going to be more difficult to make smart decisions if you're hanging on to boatloads of debt. But of course, the truth is that that when you have loads of debt, right, each paycheck requires payments to your creditors. So money that's coming in every 2 weeks, well, a good portion of it is going out in order to pay the piper. And we don't want you to be house poor. We don't want you to be a servant to the credit card companies, to Visa or to American Express. And that doesn't mean that all debt is dumb either, right? We talked about that, the strategic use of debt in episode 566. The principle I think we can extract here is that going overboard on debt, owing too many folks too much money, creates an imbalance in your life that can put you in a precarious position. And Matt, as we read that little passage, right, that the borrower is servant to the lender, I think sometimes that's been abused, and it's basically told people that like debt is not okay regardless of circumstance.
Ever.
Yeah, it's been used as like a bludgeon to hit people over the head with to see how stupid debt is. Well, that's what we were trying to avoid, talking about the strategic use of debt when we discussed it. And it makes me think of a friend who decided to pay off his student loans, even though based on where he was working, he was going to be eligible to have those loans forgiven. And he not only did he use money that he had on hand to pay off that student loan debt early that would have been forgiven, what he opted to do was to sell some of his assets, to sell some of his investments to pay off those loans early. And now that he stepped back from the movies made years ago, he has a little more wisdom. He wishes he hadn't have done it, because the truth is that debt would have been forgiven. And on the flip side, his investments would have seen, you know, quite an increase. And so while it is true that the borrower is servant to the lender, there's a lot of truth in that phrase. It's also, like you said, these are rules of thumb coming from the Proverbs. It's basically wise counsel, pointing us in the right direction, not telling us exactly how to behave in every instance.
Right. Yeah. But simultaneously, I would say that if there is somebody out there who feels that based on like because of principle that they want to pay off all debts that they owe, even though that there is a chance of it getting forgiven, I personally would take advantage of any sort of forgiveness program. But that being said, I do think that folks can fall on different sides of that fence. And while he may have changed his mind, had he not changed his mind, and in retrospect, if he was just like, nope, I still think that that was a wise decision, I totally would stand by anybody who feels that they are making the right decision for them personally.
Well, we've talked about that with some of our friends or you know, guests on the show who have paid off a mortgage early, right? And we've said, that's not what we're going to do, but it makes sense to us from a psychological and a money perspective.
Exactly.
If that debt is frustrating you to the point where you got to get rid of it and you'd rather prioritize that over other things, that's okay. But it's also, I think, there's wisdom here in not taking this little passage as something that says, like, I must sell all my possessions to get rid of my debt before I do anything else.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about some fancy living. And this is another one from Proverbs. This is from chapter 21. And in verse 17, it says that whoever loves pleasure will become poor. Whoever loves wine and olive oil will never be rich. And
what about craft beer? Does it say anything about craft beer, Matt?
I feel there's a slight sense of conviction.
Yeah.
That's maybe what I'm feeling a little bit, because obviously back then wine and olive oil, they were delicacies in ancient times. And so, yeah, is this proverb saying that you can't like nice things? Well, no. But it is possible to put too much emphasis on them if we say that we love craft beer. And oftentimes, I think maybe we use the word love too often, but there's a difference between saying that, like, oh man, I really love craft beer, versus in my heart it being something that completes me, and not just fancy food or drink, but anything I think can kind of take that place in your heart. And this one's interesting too, because I think it's a warning to those who are successful, right? Because if you might be listening and you're thinking, well, all right, that's fine, but I've got zero temptation to do that in my life. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. I'm barely making enough to pay for the essentials. Well, definitely still pay attention, but this is a warning to those who are at the stage in their wealth-building game that they have a little bit more disposable income. They have the ability. They've got a little more margin on hand, and they're thinking, oh, well, what am I going to spend my money on now? And you start to spend it on some of these nicer things, which I believe can be a slippery slope. I think if by spending a little bit, if that puts you on this path to losing control of your spending and where it is that your money is going, I think it's better to not have spent that money at all on that thing and to have never experienced this thing that could have brought you some joy in your life, if it means that you're going to see a lot more of your money going to waste and potentially your life even ruined as well.
All right. Makes me think of Diderot's robe. We've talked about that on the show before, right? He's the French philosopher.
The Diderot effect.
Yeah. Who gets a new robe, and for some reason, everything else in his life looks dingy. Like, he was frugal, and he gets this one nice new piece of clothing, and then all of a sudden he goes bankrupt, basically trying to update everything else around him. And I think that is, you're right, that's a real problem. We're going to give kind of the counterbalance point to that in a little bit when we go over some Stoic advice, Matt. But it is true, I think you're right, that it's easy to fall in love with nice things. And once we've started incorporating more nice things into our lives, it's hard for us to go back. We as humans, we have a hard time.
Yeah.
Once you start getting your house clean twice a month, it's hard to go back to once a month, right? Stuff mm-hmm. like that. So you have to be careful about what you bring in on the front end. And Matt, let's do something else from the Bible, from Christian tradition. This is finally not in the Proverbs. This is from Luke chapter 12. This is a parable that Jesus tells about storing up possessions for yourself here on earth. And this farmer, he harvests crops and he yields just such a bounty that he decides to not only just build bigger storehouses, but tear down the old ones so that he can build bigger ones in their stead. And that once he has those built and his massive harvest stored, he can just eat, drink, and be merry. He doesn't even have to think about the future anymore. He's got himself set for life. And I think, you know, there's a sense in which maybe we all think like that our pursuit of financial independence is going to allow us to not have to rely on anyone or anything. But while Jesus is speaking, he's basically speaking to where we pin our eternal hope in this passage. But a simple and practical lesson behind this parable too is that life is fleeting. And this guy, he decides to build these bigger barns so that he can store his stuff. And then just chillax, right? Just rest on his laurels, hang out, sip lemonade in his rocking chair. But the reality is that not a single one of us knows if we're going to wake up tomorrow to enjoy the fruits of our labor. You know, eventually we're all going to die, which actually probably, Matt, makes it a good time for us to start talking about the Stoics, their wisdom, because they were kind of hyper-focused on the ultimate reality.
Memento mori.
That's right.
Keeping that eventuality of death front and center on the tippy tops of their minds.
That's right. Yeah, so we'll talk about some Stoic wisdom. We'll even get into a little bit of Buddhism, and we'll get to that ancient wisdom and how it intersects with our money right after this break.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations
get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch, they make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
All right, now that we wrapped up that Jesus Christ Super Saver segment, we can move on to the Stoics. It still cracks me up to say that out loud.
It's a good title.
The Stoics. All right. So when you think about the fact that these folks lived in ancient Greece, like 2,000 years ago, it is impressive to hear some of the wisdom that they possessed. And so the Stoic philosophy, it's all about building resilience, and that no matter what circumstances you are born into, that you will grow into confidence that you can take on anything. It's no surprise that I feel like Stoicism is sort of making a comeback today.
Yeah.
Whether that's just sort of the current financial crisis, or the, you know, like where markets are, or just the kind of world that we live in today. But there's a lot of great truths that we can take from Stoicism and apply those to not only our lives, but to personal finances as well.
I think living in a time of abundance like we have now, like it, there's even more necessity for self-restraint. And the Stoics really talked about that a great deal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because at the time, like, Greek civilization was at its pinnacle. Yeah. Like, it was at the peak. But they also realized that
partaking in that and engorging yourself on the abundance
was not bringing about that happiness and ultimate fulfillment. Yeah, totally agree.
That's right.
And it's really interesting because there's certainly a parallel to that today within our world, where we have the most comfort, the most information at our fingertips as well. It's like we
the
lack
most wealth. Even the poorest among us have more wealth than really was imaginable throughout most of history.
Yeah, I mean, and just the internet. Like literally, we lack very little in our modern age, in particular in this country.
Yeah, for sure. So Epictetus, Matt, he's one of the most fascinating Stoics to me. Partly because he was born into slavery, and his name literally means the acquired one. And he spent the first 30 years of his life in chains. And he once said that wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants. That's the quote I remember from him most. And then Seneca, another of the great Stoic philosophers, said that contented poverty is an honorable estate. And I think those two quotes really go together for me, because at the heart of both of them is the ability to be completely satisfied with mm-hmm. where you're at in life, even if your lot in life, even if the place where you are isn't where you want to be, even if there's a lot of progress left to be made. But to realize that getting more money, more possessions, a bigger house, a nicer car, that they're not actually going to bring fulfillment, we would say it's wise to desire the upside of wealth without being dependent on it. And I think it's really easy, Matt, for us to think that once we cross a certain threshold, whether it's net worth wise or whether it's success in our career wise, whether it's achieving the position or a certain amount of podcast downloads or something like that, that that's going to make you happy. The truth is...
Oh, it will.
The truth is, once you get to that point, there's always a next hill to climb. And so it never does really make you happy as a human. And so you have to find your contentedness in other places.
That's right.
And being able to, yeah, see kind of how the Stoics were able to do it, how they thought about it, I think can be really informative to how we start to think about our own trajectory.
Yeah, we're constantly moving the goalposts. While you're talking about how we often seek after more possessions, here's another banger from Seneca, which is, it is the quality rather than the quantity that matters. This is a great one because it feels like our society is, it's often focused on just acquiring more stuff, you know, like not just finding fulfillment in those things, but just more and more, you know, it's sort of like the bigger is better kind of mantra. But we feel, for instance, it's way better to focus on quality over quantity. We think it's better to have like quality relationships rather than a slew of acquaintances, and spending our money on quality items is something worth prioritizing as well. Like in a world of fast fashion and prepackaged foods, disposable toys, a world of plastic, basically, it's helpful to rethink our spending patterns. And, you know, at least for me, that's meant buying fewer things, but oftentimes more just expensive ones as it pertains to quality, because they're going to last for a much longer time.
It's like those antique pieces versus the IKEA pieces that we talked about at the beginning.
Exactly. And not to disparage IKEA, there's a time and place, and depending on where you are in life, but simultaneously, yeah, I think there's a lot that can be learned, not only from buying higher quality items that are going to last, but also the different things that we pour our time and energy into as well.
Yeah. All right, another good one from Seneca, because he was full of them. He said that until we begin to go without them, we fail to realize how unnecessary many things are. And I mean, that's so ridiculously true. We would suggest that it would be helpful exercise to walk through your house, finding objects that you really wanted at one point. We all have those. And then things maybe you thought you couldn't live without, in order to see whether or not they're making you happy, whether they're paying dividends. And are you still using that? What was a must-have item? Are you mm-hmm. using it regularly? And a good place to start would probably be your closet, right? Do you still have tags on those new items you purchased months and months ago saying that you, oh man, I can't wait to wear this. This is going to be the perfect piece for this and this occasion. Well, so many of the things we identify as needs are actually just wants, right? And we would do well to think about the things we purchased that are actually unnecessary. And to keep this lesson front of mind for future purchases. And it might even be helpful to purposefully go without some things and start to clear out some of the items in your house you aren't using as frequently, to give away to people who might use those things more, with more regularity. But the truth is, a lot of us have probably a lot of unnecessary things floating around our house, things that cost us money to buy, and that costs us time to produce the money. And when the reality is that our time is our most important asset, we have often squandered it in the pursuit of things that aren't really moving the needle for us.
That's right. Well, so actually, as you're talking about being charitable, Marcus Aurelius, he's another one of the most famous Stoic philosophers out there. He said that the only wealth which you keep forever is the wealth that you have given away. And, you know, I feel that we've lost the understanding of this in our culture. that always does want to have more. But it is so true that when you give your time, your money away, that you do become a happier person. Oftentimes, the folks who are most generous are the ones who actually have the least amount of possessions. But we think that giving your money away regularly to causes, to folks, or who you're passionate about, who you want to see advanced in the world, that is going to allow you to see your money do good around you, while also giving you a healthier relationship with money in general.
Yeah, we've always said that giving your money away gives you a more healthy relationship to your money, lessening your attachment to something that is a tool, right? And that you can use for good, but that you can use to see good happen in the world around you, specifically through nonprofits or in generosity to individuals who are in need nearby where you live. And Matt, I want to hit one more from Seneca, who he said, "For the wise man does not consider himself unworthy of any gifts from fortune's hand. He does not love wealth, but he would rather have it. He does not admit it into his heart, but into his home. And what wealth is his, he does not reject, but keeps, wishing it to supply greater scope for him to practice his virtue." And I really love this one because, I think, you and I, we really believe that building wealth is a good thing. Obviously, we talk about it a lot on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But it's important to ask ourselves, is our pursuit of building wealth helping us become more of who we want to be? Or is it detracting from it? And I think at different points in my life, Matt, I've found that my attempts at building wealth, I've been so focused on the money side of my life that I've been missing out on things that are actually more important. And I think what Seneca is speaking to here, he's talking about not letting the wealth we acquire get too close to our hearts, influencing and changing who we are. And so I think you can do both those things simultaneously. I think you can rather have wealth, like he says, without loving it, while keeping wealth really in a healthy spot in your life, where it is something that you are keen to build, keen to preserve, but that gets demoted down the list of biggest priorities in your life.
Yeah, I love the casualness of it. He would rather have it. He does not love money. There's this sort of, like, not laissez-faire approach, but just kind of like a casual, open-handed, it's not something that you're clinging to. It's not something that you're striving after.
It's not ambivalence, but it's somewhere in between there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we've said a lot, we've quoted a bunch from Seneca, but he also talks about what is the proper amount of wealth for an individual to have. And he says, first of all, it's having enough money that you're able to cover the essential things in life. But then secondly, it's just simply having enough, which I love, because it's like a double-edged sword, because what that means is that, like, pretty much anybody listening to this can decide right now that they have enough. You just have to decide that. But again, you can flip that on its head, though, because there might be somebody who would always say that, like, well, I don't have enough. And it could always be this thing that they're striving after, where they are just wanting more and more and
feeding
more.
Feeding the beast.
Exactly.
That's insatiable.
Yeah. And so I think there's a lot of power there. But basically, I think what Seneca is getting at is the ability for us to rein in our behavior and how it is that we view and perceive and pursue money. It comes down to us as individuals. I don't think there's not, like, necessarily a right or wrong amount of money, but it's all about how it is that we do the dang thing.
Yeah, that reminds me of another saying that my mom used to say back then. Speaking of ancient wisdom, Matt, she's not that old, but she would always tell me that how, like, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Yeah,
and
it matters.
So much truth to it, right? That it is how, it's not the words that are coming out of your mouth, it's the way in which you are treating someone while you say it, and whether you're saying it with, like, anger or whether you're saying it out of love, it's people perceive that. And so much of the same is true, I think, when it comes to how we handle our money, and the way in which we go about it matters. And I don't know, there's this concept in Buddhism called the middle way. I think that's worth mentioning here too. Basically, it's this call to avoid extremes. And the reality is we live in a society that is incredibly polarized, which I would say makes it easier said than done, right? We're kind of fighting uphill to live in a way that's different from our modern culture, from popular culture. Political views are fierce. Money views can be as well. On that front, Matt, it makes me think of the FIRE movement. It's kind of an extreme way to view your money.
That's true.
It's not that there aren't great principles there and great people in the movement, but we've also said that you and I, we've also always really talked about kind of a middle way that would focus not on depriving yourself, but also on not overindulging. And that's just constantly what we're trying to espouse here is balance. Basically, this middle way with your finances, enjoying the here and now, while realizing that money is a piece of the puzzle, while saving and investing wisely for your future. And it is not the easiest thing to get right. I think it's a pendulum that is constantly swinging because we as humans, we never really kind of find the sweet spot and stay there. We're always kind of on the march to be in that sweet spot. And so it's okay to see that in yourself, because I think anybody who's trying to be decent with their money sees that in their own lives, right? That at times they are too frugal, and at other times they might prioritize investing for the future more than they should. They should enjoy some of the fruits of their labor in the here and now. And that maybe you might think after hearing us talk about this, oh man, I haven't really thought about giving my money away at all. And maybe it's a good time for you to reconsider, well, maybe you're too attached to your money. And it would be a good idea to look for ways to give of what you've been given, to care for those around you, people who have more need than you do. But Matt, it's just fun to kind of go over some of these ancient quotes, some of these ancient texts to gain wisdom, because there are a lot of deep and beautiful truths here that I think like we can all run through the filter of modern life and kind of start to make different choices with how we think about how we approach our money.
Totally. Yeah. And it's not lost on us, too, that we barely just touched on like Buddhism and any tradition that
some of the Eastern. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Eastern traditions, as opposed to most of what we talked about today, was kind of more from the Western tradition.
We're speaking to things that we're more familiar with, at least.
Very
but
true.
There's a lot more we could dive into.
There is. Yep.
For sure.
I could totally see us doing an entirely new episode where we do dive into some of those Eastern traditions and some of the wisdom that can be garnered there and how it is that we can apply that to our money. So, yeah, maybe look out for that one in the future. But Joel, we're going to go ahead and shift to our beer that you and I enjoyed. This was Apricot Crumble. This is a beer by Vitamin C Brewing. What were your thoughts on this one, dude?
Yeah, I feel like actually a month or so ago, I got a pie from one of our local pie making shops, and it tastes a lot like this one. It was so good. And the beer was delicious as well. It's like the apricots came through nicely. I think ours was a peach crumble, but the apricots are like a little sweeter, have just like a little more tartness going on. This one had like some of the fresh crust vibes as well going on, with like a dash of cinnamon in there to go along with it. So this definitely tasted like the beer version of a delicious pie. And I gotta say, I like it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it as well. We've had some of the beers by Humble Forager. It also makes me think of Tripping Animals, where all of their beers are in this style, but they're often just boozier, and they're just way thicker, a lot heavier. And this was a similar style, but they didn't get too crazy with it. I felt that they kept the amount of sweetness in check, where it felt like it was not quite ripe apricot, right? Yeah. Like it was a little bit tart, like maybe had like a slight amount of crunch, as opposed to where you're looking at it. Because the best fruit, like the sweetest fruit, it never looks good,
yeah.
Right? Like right. You look at it and you think, oh, should I toss that? But then you wash it and eat it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like the sweetest, most delicious ripe fruit that I've ever had. I feel like this one tasted like an apricot that looked real nice, which also meant that it was a little bit tart.
Yeah.
But it totally had some of those crumble crust notes going on, some of that, I think there's like some of that lactose in it as well. It made it taste nice and creamy. It was really enjoyable. And I don't think we've ever actually had a beer by Vitamin C before. But yeah, I'm glad that you were able to pick this one up and we were able to share it during this episode.
No doubt. Me too. It was a good one. But that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to sign up for the How to Money newsletter on our website at howtomoney.com/newsletter. Makes sense, right? It'll show up into your inbox every Tuesday morning, hopefully giving you a nice chuckle along with some good money information. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.